Welcome to the Senate Committee on Environment and Natural Resources. This is March 6, 2013. Amazing, we're in March already. So we have a little bit of change on the agenda. The work session on Senate Bill 536 is postponed because we're still waiting for the paperwork. So I'm actually not going to give you a date on that yet until we know when we have the paperwork finalized. We have a public hearing and possible work session on a House bill, and I think we have just a couple people to testify on that. But since we don't have a quorum, we'll get started on the public hearing on Senate Bill 212. I'll go ahead and open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 212. Beth, if you can please tell us what the bill's about.
Madam Chair and Vice Chair Olson, Senate Bill 212 requires the Environmental Quality Commission to prepare certain revisions to Oregon State Implementation Plan under the Federal Clean Air Act, and it would declare an emergency, making the act effective upon passage.
Okay, thank you, Beth. And we have a former committee member here to testify who was a distinguished member of this committee for a couple years. And I'm pleased to say that we're not discussing the raccoon bill today, so you'll be happy about that. But we are discussing Senate Bill 212, and I see that your name is on it, Senator, so welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. This idea came to me as we...
Senator, you still have to say your name, even though we know
Chuck
who you
Thompson,
are.
Chuck Thompson, Senate District 26.
Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry.
About raccoons again?
No, yeah. This is not raccoons. I got to get home, though, and get my wife out of jail, I think. Thanks to Senator Olson. We all, or at least at times, we all talk about reducing regulations, and a lot of people put that to, they think about businesses and reducing regulations, saving people dollars. And I tried to think of a regulation that would affect people in my districts and also other districts that might apply to. And I got to thinking about this one when I was on the Ways and Means Committee last year, and they swept $3 million from this fund. And I said, well, if they don't need these dollars, and we're going to sweep the funds away from these emission tested programs, then maybe we don't need to be doing this anymore. I came back, and there was a bill in Washington that limits this, and in a few years might completely do away with the testing. But just to give a little history on this, in 1975, when Oregon launched its vehicle emissions testing program in the Portland area and the Medford area, carbon monoxide levels in downtown Portland rose above national standard on average almost once every 3 days. But it has been 26 years since downtown Portland has recorded a carbon monoxide violation. And after that many years, so many things have changed: automobile technology, fuels, driving habits. But one thing hasn't changed: vehicles in the Portland and Medford area still are required to pass an emissions test to get registration tags renewed. According to DEQ's own website, Portland's air currently meets all federal air quality health standards. In addition, according to DEQ's most recent air quality data summary, the smog levels did not exceed the federal health standard in any Oregon community in 2011. I sponsor this bill on behalf of my constituents and yours who feel they are being forced to pay a fee that is no longer necessary. The Clean Air Act charges the EPA with setting air pollution health standards, but this means that regulators decide when their own jobs are finished. No matter how clean the air is, it seems they will continue to find new unacceptable risks to maintain programs and fees that are no longer needed. In addition, Washington has already passed legislation similar to this bill, which should be of particular interest to us because we share an airshed with Clark County. According to Washington Statute 46.16A.060, motor vehicles that are 2009 year or newer are exempt from emission test requirements, and all vehicles will be exempt by 2019. Yet, in the Portland area, all 1975 and newer cars, trucks, vans, motorhomes, buses powered by gasoline, alternative fuels such as propane or hybrids registered within the DEQ boundaries must still pay their $19 testing fee. Portland Medford is a place that finds great value in changing with the times. I believe the time has come to eliminate this increasingly unnecessary hassle for our citizens. I am open to amendments such as reducing fee on the cars, reducing fees on the businesses that have to put into this program if we're not going to use the fees as they should be used and if they're just going to be swept. In addition, So I'm open to options. I kind of brought this to us at least to get maybe something started and get some information from DEQ. And if we haven't really looked at this program since 1975, maybe it's time. So thanks for listening.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the good senator about raccoons or other things? No. Senator Bates.
I've often wondered about the Portland area, as you have, Senator. The air quality here is a lot different than it is in an area where I live, Medford. Mm-hmm. The Rogue Valley is surrounded by mountains on all four sides, and we get inversions that are really unbelievable. The public down there has broadly supported the smog situation as far as cars are concerned. I'm not sure what it's like in Klamath Falls, but we have a similar issue there, but they're more open than we are as far as geography. And so my only concern is that this is a good program for Medford, at least, broadly supported by the citizens down there for obvious reasons. We get inversions on a regular basis, summer and winter, and it really gets to be tough for people. So we may be in a different situation because of the geography involved in this part of the state.
I think, Madam Chair. Do I have to ask them?
No.
Yes, you have to raise your hand. No, just kidding.
Most, I'm used to being on the committee. Most of Senator Bates, Chair Dingfelder, I think most of the information I got was from the Portland metro area. I think they found that 1% of the cars tested didn't meet standards. Maybe DEQ would have those numbers on the Medford area.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm sure they probably will. They'll be coming up in just a minute, too.
Senator Hess has a question.
Yeah. Yeah, do you have a question or comment?
I have a comment. I'm very sympathetic to this. And you're kind of complaining, if you will, about two things. One, the sweeps that we do sometimes around here that just seem so unfair. But there's a long line. Not just this program or this agency. But I think at some point we do need to ask, when have we succeeded at something and need to stop? And this has been a popular program. It worked.
Yeah.
With the technology that we have and in new cars, it really makes me question about this because we subject these things it is a real hassle, especially to working people to go through there. And DMV has done a pretty good job of trying to expedite that and make it as painless as possible. But it's not easy for a lot of people to take off work and go do this. And if it's no longer necessary.
So part of why we're having this hearing today is because Senator Thompson and Senator Olson requested the hearing so we can have a discussion about. So we're going to hear from DEQ to try to answer some of those questions. But before we call up DEQ, I just want to make sure to correct something for the record, because I think, Senator, I heard you say that this program hasn't been looked at since 1979. So I served on the Audits Committee in 2003 in the House, and we spent a year reviewing the program because of the 2003. We had a separate Audits Committee. And I spent a year, 2 years on the committee, but we spent a year reviewing the vehicle inspection program. At the time, the proposal was to eliminate the program. So we visited multiple inspection stations around the state. And at the time, the proposal was to privatize it. And what I recall was it was actually would have cost the state more
to privatize it
because you still needed to have state oversight. I understand this is different. This is looking at, not privatizing, but having an exemption for cars at a certain time. But I just wanted to correct for the record that there has been reviews of the program because I spent a year on that committee as we were looking at that, especially for people who were listening. So we're going to have DEQ come up because we're going to have a lot of questions.
I do have a comment, if I may, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
As a co-sponsor, I agree with Senator Thompson. It's an important bill. It is... a hassle. I have some documentation from DEQ that's quite interesting. They provided me with the number of vehicles tested during the 2012 calendar year, but it was interesting because their data only went to 2008. And in the data, a 2008 model year car, they tested 37,234 cars. They had 279 that failed, which was a 0.74% failure rate. Now, they could not provide me with data from 2009, 10, 11, or 12. So in Senator Thompson's bill with the sliding scale, we would look at perhaps if the 2008 models are at 0.74% failure, perhaps the 2012 models are at 0.1% failure. We're not certain because we don't have that data. But the fact being is that of the year model that they gave me, they tested 523,578 vehicles at a $19 fee. That would be about $9.9 million that they took in. And they had a 7.18% failure rate, but most of the failure rate was in the later model years. And so perhaps Senator Thompson is amenable to amendments, and we could say that, you know, those later model years must still be looked at because there's a failure rate. But new cars, as a matter of fact, I just bought a new car last week. They didn't even test it. They just put license plates on it.
Thank you for, and I got that data, so thank you for sharing that. We should make sure and share that with the committee.
But it was an electric car, right?
No.
Chair Dingfelder, Co-Chair Olson, maybe they aren't able to come up with those new figures because they were anticipating their funds being swept. Sure. They didn't have the money to do it.
Thank you, Senator.
Oh, thanks.
And we'll have the DEQ, Department of Environmental Quality, come up. We have Palmer Mason and Andy Ginsberg. I will tell you that I just came from the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Natural Resources. I'll wait until the conversation stops over on this end. I just came from the Natural Resources Subcommittee on Ways and Means, and we had a pretty robust discussion about fund sweeps. So for those of you who serve on Ways and Means, I think there's only... Oh, there's the two gentlemen on the end. There was a pretty robust discussion about how we propose on one hand fee increases and on the other hand we end up sweeping these funds, and it seems to be at a higher propensity in natural resource agency budgets. So just something to keep in mind, this is not the only place
the hidden tax.
That we've been sweeping funds, and I do think that we should have a broader discussion for those listening in today at the Ways and Means level about that process. But thank you, gentlemen. Palmer, you want to get started?
Madam Chair, thank you, members of the committee. Thank you. My name is Palmer Mason. I'm with the Department of Environmental Quality. I have here with me today Andy Ginsberg. He's the administrator of our Air Quality Division. Andy's going to take you through shortly through our program, our vehicle inspection program, and then talk specifically about Senate Bill 212. We're neutral on the bill, but we do have some concerns that we want to share with the committee, and we'd be happy to take any questions. So thank you.
And Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, my name is Andy Ginsberg. As Palmer said, I'm the Air Quality Division Administrator at DEQ, and I do appreciate the opportunity to enter into a conversation about the vehicle inspection program. I'm going to provide some information about the program, but also express some concerns about Senate Bill 212. The bill essentially would require us to use Washington's approach to testing vehicles while phasing out the program between 2014 and 2020. So first, let me assure you that DEQ agrees we should periodically evaluate our emission pollution reduction strategies and eliminate those that are no longer needed or are no longer effective. And we have a track record of actually doing this. We eliminated a requirement for oxygenated gasoline, Senator Bates may recall, once it was no longer needed to meet the carbon monoxide standard. As you heard in earlier testimony, we're handily meeting the carbon monoxide standard, and that strategy was no longer needed. Last year, I committed to do a similar review of the vehicle inspection program in testimony to the House Committee on Energy, Environment, and Water regarding House Bill 4112, which was identical to Senate Bill 212. So before I give you details about the commitment that I made about reviewing our program, I'd like to first briefly explain why we do vehicle inspection and how the program works. So the main purpose of vehicle inspection is to help meet the federal ozone or smog standard in the Portland and Medford areas. Cars are among the top emitters of smog-forming pollutants, and vehicle inspection was the single largest strategy in our plan to meet and maintain the ozone standard. Violating federal air quality standards not only harms public health, but also makes it harder for industrial businesses to expand. And this is particularly important because EPA has announced plans to tighten the ozone standard in 2014. And at the levels that EPA is considering and has announced, Oregon could either go back into violation of the ozone standard or be just below the line. So before we can evaluate the ongoing need for vehicle inspection, we first need to know what the ozone standard is going to be and what other regulations might be needed to replace the program, the vehicle inspection program, if we eliminate it. Another key purpose of the vehicle inspection program is to reduce toxic air pollution. In our recent exhaustive study of air toxics in the Portland area, we found that about a fourth of the total risk from toxic air pollutants comes from gasoline vehicle engines. And while cars emit many air toxics, the most significant contributors to cancer risk are two, benzene and 1,3-butadiene. Vehicle inspection reduces these pollutants by about a fourth. And again, before we can evaluate the ongoing need for the program, we need to evaluate further what future emission levels of these toxic air pollutants will be and what other regulations might be needed to make up for that loss in pollution reduction from vehicle inspection. So you may be wondering how the vehicle inspection program reduces these pollutants and why it's needed with today's cleaner cars. As cars age, their emission control systems can fail, and they need to be maintained to continue operating properly to keep emissions low. And this is especially true for today's cars because they have finely tuned emission control systems that have literally hundreds of components that are working together to keep emissions extremely low, the ultra-low levels of emissions of today's new cars, and they need to be maintained to work properly. National studies and our own research show that without vehicle inspection, many of these critical repairs are not done or they're delayed. And so we actually confirmed this recently by offering voluntary free testing in the Eugene area and the Bend area. And we found that the levels of failure in those communities outside our vehicle inspection boundary were about four times higher than the level in our boundary.
And I'm sorry, Andy, is that with older cars or only, or is that with new cars
as
well?
That's with relatively new cars. We looked at 1996 and newer cars. Those are the ones that have the onboard computers and the dashboard indicator that we can easily do a mobile test for. So the relatively newer cars, and we found about a four-time higher failure rate outside of the boundary. And what that basically shows, Senator, is that the vehicle inspection program results in routine preventative maintenance that keeps the failure rate lower in the Portland area and the Medford area.
Madam Chair.
Question? Go ahead.
You're first. Go ahead.
I'll let Senator Bates go first. Go ahead.
Yeah. How many cars did you test?
We test about a million.
No, I mean vehicles. The one is outside the boundary.
Oh, well,
the
Eugene
group,
control
sorry.
Group.
Yeah.
This was a relatively, Senator Dingfelder, Senator Bates, this was a relatively limited study, and I don't want to say that it was a statistically significant study. We did it over a period of a couple of weeks, and we tested vehicles during a car care week and together with Earth Week, and we tested vehicles of the same age in Portland and Medford at the same time as we were testing them, and we compared the results. So obviously more study could be done.
Yes, follow-up.
How many cars did you check?
I would have to get that number for you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
I was going to ask the same question. I'd like to see all that data.
Okay, I'd be happy to provide.
If you're going to use it in testimony, I would probably realize that you'd bring it in to show it.
We'll make sure that the committee staff follows up.
Thank you.
So the vehicle inspection program motivates motorists to maintain their vehicles timely because it's tied to the DMV registration process. So once a vehicle that's registered in Portland or Medford is 5 years old, it must pass vehicle inspection to be renewed during the normal two-year DMV renewal cycle. So,
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson?
Yeah, I hate to interrupt you, but I have a 2010 Ford Focus that I had to take through DEQ. It's not 5 years old. Why did I need to take that through DEQ from your just last comment?
Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Olson, cars, there are some a few exceptions to what I said, and that would be in the case where a vehicle moves to Oregon from out of state or where a title transfers and things like that. So there are a few cases where younger vehicles would need to be tested, but the basic requirement is that at your second re-registration with DMV is when your test is due.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up?
This was my first registration, and all the documentation said I had to go through DEQ test station. And it's a 2010. This is 2013. I bought it in 2011, so this would be my first test. And DEQ did not, the DMV didn't say I didn't have to. I had to go through to get that test, so I don't see where that exemption is explained.
Chair Dingfeld, Senator Olson, was the car purchased from out of state?
No, it was purchased in Canby.
Okay. I'll have to, we can certainly research that and get back to you with an answer.
Okay.
One more important point I'd like to make about how vehicle inspection works. The purpose of the program is to prevent failures, not to catch failures. Vehicles that have been built since 1996 have a dashboard light that motorists can see that tells them that repairs are needed. Most motorists in the Portland and Medford areas know that they can't pass the test with that light on, and so they have their cars repaired before they come to our stations. And even so you would expect that our failure rate essentially would be zero for 1996 and newer vehicles because you can't pass the test with the light on, why would you come and get tested? But even so, the failure rate ranges from a few percent, as you heard, for brand new cars or relatively new cars, five-year-old cars, up to 11% for 1996 cars. And for vehicles that are older than 1996, the failure rate steadily increases with age, ranging from 20 to 35% for a 1980s vintage vehicle, and nearly 50% for the oldest vehicles that we test. The overall failure rate, as I think you heard, is 7%. But as I mentioned, we know that actual repair rate is much higher than that. Most of the cars are repaired before they come in to be tested. So the bottom line is that the program is really all about preventative maintenance, and that reduces the number of cars that fail the test. And we consider the relatively low failure rate to be a sign of success, and we're always trying to actually drive that number down by getting better information out to consumers and working with the repair industry to do preventative maintenance. So back to the commitment that we've made to review the program. Because vehicle inspection is part of our federally approved plan to meet the ozone standard, we need to demonstrate to EPA that any change in the program will not cause a violation of the ozone standard.
So I have a question about that.
Yes.
So when would we need to get a waiver and how would we demonstrate that?
Chair Dinkfelder, I'm going to describe that right now.
Okay.
The process starts with DEQ developing a comprehensive inventory of all of the emissions from vehicles, businesses, and other sources that contribute to ozone. And then we project future ozone levels using a three-dimensional photochemical grid model, so fairly technical analysis, looking at our emissions and projecting what the ambient concentrations of ozone are. And then we compare that to the federal ozone standard, which, as I mentioned, will be changed in 2014 and likely more stringent. If we project violations, then
I apologize for the noise, but we're competing against cupcakes. So we're going to try to settle it down a little bit more. So
we'll lose that competition.
I know, we are.
You're bring cupcakes back.
So when we project our emissions, our ambient ozone levels, and compare that to the standard, if we project violations, then we'll need to adopt additional strategies to make up the gap. But if no violations are projected, then we can test the effect of removing emission reduction strategies. And that assessment will include a thorough analysis of the effect of removing vehicle inspection. And not only that, we'll look at details of the program, such as the boundary for testing and the model years that are tested, to see what effect it has on meeting the ozone standard to make those changes. Once we start this analysis, it will take us about 18 months to do. And then EPA would have up to 18 months to review and approve it once we submit it to them. And because this will be a costly analysis, our plan is to conduct it after we know what the level of the new ozone standard will be, which, as I mentioned, is likely to be 2014. And we would do that as part of our work to develop the next long-term ozone plan for Oregon. So, and our current plan is expiring in 2017. So our window is really between 2014 and 2017 when it makes the most sense to do this analysis. And so we've scheduled this work for the 2015 to 16 timeframe. Turning to Washington, because this bill would require us to modify our program to operate like Washington's, they're, of course, operating under a similar timeline that we are with regard to the ozone standard. Their vehicle inspection program is currently scheduled to phase out between 2014 and 2020, but keep in mind that that phase-out plan was adopted in 2005, which was long before it was known that EPA was planning to tighten the ozone standard next year. So to date, we just checked with Washington. They have not submitted a request to EPA to revise their program, nor have they done an analysis or a demonstration that eliminating their vehicle inspection program will not cause violations of the ozone standard. So depending on the stringency of the new ozone standard, which will come out in 2014, they may have to revisit their phase-out plan if it's not possible to achieve and maintain the standard without vehicle inspection. So it's still a question mark about where Washington's going to end up. Between now and 2015, our focus is on making the program as fast and convenient as possible. Oregon was the first state to switch from testing the tailpipe to plugging into the car's onboard computer. This is not only faster, but we can give customers a printout showing them what components need to be repaired. It also enabled us to reduce staff pretty significantly in the program, and that's one of the reasons we've been able to save funds, which led partially to the sweep that you were talking about earlier. By shifting to onboard testing, we significantly reduced the testing time. We reduced staffing by 50 vehicle inspectors at the same time that the number of vehicles increased by more than 30,000 just due to population growth in Portland and Medford areas.
And that was during what time?
That was, we switched in 2001. And so between 2001 and today, we've been able to reduce that staffing level. We installed the nation's first self-service testing and registration renewal booth, kind of like when you go into Home Depot or a grocery store and you're able to check out yourself. This booth allows you to do your own test. And we're developing new technology that will allow customers to send us their test information over the Internet. And once that's operational, then customers wouldn't have to come into our test centers at all. For many years, we've provided vehicle registration on the spot to customers who pass, and that saves them a trip to a DMV field office. We also bring our mobile testing vans to dealers so they don't have to shuttle cars back and forth to our test centers and wait in line. So with these and other innovations, we have extremely high customer satisfaction and customer service ratings. So again, while we understand the intent of Senate Bill 212, we believe the best time to review the program is once the new ozone standard is known and after a thorough analysis has been done. And we will be conducting this review in the 2015 to 16 timeframe as part of our comprehensive update to Oregon's ozone plan. So thank you very much for your attention. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, and I'm sorry,
I'm Bob Anderson.
Okay, so why don't we have Bob go first, and then I'm sure there's going to be questions for DQ, but I don't want to make you sit up there if you don't have to.
As long as you have cupcakes, I don't care.
That's right. Well, thank you for coming here today, and I know that you took time out of your working schedule to be here, so I want to make sure we had time to hear your testimony, so thank you.
Thank you, Chair Dingfelder and Co-Chair Olson. My name is Robert Anderson, and my address is 17475 Richardson Road. I live in Dallas, Oregon, but I own an auto repair shop just over here on 13th Street called AJ's Auto Repair, and we've been down there for 36 years. And as a result of working with automobiles and how automobiles affect our environment, I'm really concerned about Senate Bill 212. And the reason I am is because I think we're missing the big picture here. The average age of automobiles in our country is ramping up faster than ever before. In 1990, the average age of an automobile was about 6.5 years old. Last year, the average age was about just less than 11 years old. And what's problematic with that is there's no clear end in sight, particularly with economic conditions, fewer and fewer people, with the exception of Vice Chair Olson, are buying brand new cars. We see the fleet that we work on at our shop. We do about 5,000 cars a year, and we see that age of those cars getting older and older and older. The potential for air quality problems really is increasing rapidly because of that. Because as a car gets older, what happens is the OBD2 system we talked about earlier on a car is designed to monitor very tight emission standards. But as the car gets older and begins to leak both externally and internally, it begins to leak VOCs into the atmosphere. What happens is, of course, because of the OBD2 system, is it turns on a check engine light, or a mill light, as we call it in the industry. The manufacturers equipped vehicles with those onboard diagnostic capabilities as a result of amendments to the 1996 Clean Air Act. It's not true that every time a check engine light comes on a car, that people run down and get it fixed. In fact, out of the 5,000 cars we worked on last year, about 8% of those cars came in with check engine lights on that people did not want to address because they don't understand the nature of the light. Their thinking is the vehicle seems to run fine. Why is there a problem? Why should anything be done? And it's reached a point to where a lot of folks in our industry now have questionnaires that you fill out, much like what you fill out when you go to the dentist, and it asks specific questions like, is there a check engine light on in your automobile, and how long has it been on in your automobile? When that light comes on, it, even though the consumer feels like there isn't a problem with the car, it very clearly is outside of its environmental parameters. And when we go to repair it, we find out that it has an evaporatory leak due to a cracked hose or leaking fuel system of some sort. And again, those sorts of repairs, when we talk to customers about them, they're not, what they say is, we're not in an area where we have a DEQ test site. The car seems to, again, run fine. We're really not interested in doing anything with it. So that's what the regulatory piece is about. I mean, we just recently passed laws governing cell phones but nonetheless, people use cell phones. That's why they get pulled over and get a ticket. So as much as we dislike the inconvenience of having our cars checked to be sure they're in regulatory compliance, is a very important piece of a responsibility that we all have, all the driving public has, to the environment. So can I answer any questions you might have?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much for sharing your testimony. Do you mind sticking around for a few questions in case there are some?
No, that's fine.
So we can ask the real live people. These are not real live people. They're bureaucrats. So we'll still ask somebody
that actually gets their fingers dirty. Okay.
By the way, Beth took the cupcakes away, so you notice how quiet it got taken. Right, Senator Olson.
Mr. Anderson, have you ever had a case where a vehicle has come in and the gas cap isn't tight enough and the check engine light comes on?
It happens often.
Okay.
But it also happens because the seal in the gas cap itself has failed.
Okay.
That system is monitored so closely that if a piece of casting material comes loose in the gas cap, it can plug a portion of the metered vent and cause the light to come on. And the only way to figure that out is to take the gas cap apart. They're really, really delicate computer systems.
You obviously know your business. Do you realize that this bill is geared to remove newer cars from the testing process? And since we have documentation from DEQ that they can't even give me the numbers of newer cars they tested, we're looking specifically at newer cars. Do you understand?
I do understand, but these newer cars will become older cars.
Right, but we're saying that the newer cars will be not tested and the older cars will be. Follow-up, please.
Follow-up. And just to clarify, so is it it's an exemption for a certain amount of time?
Well, apparently from DEQ, they can't provide me numbers for 2012 through 2009 automobiles, so I assume that they're not testing them.
So, Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Olson, we test a small number of vehicles in those age ranges. This table that you received stops at 2008 because that's vehicles before that are exempt except under certain conditions, like if it's brand new, registered in Oregon where it had been previously registered out of state and the title has changed hands. So there's a very small number of tests, and I'll be happy to get you that information. It just was left off the table.
Mr. Anderson, yeah. Do you realize also that DEQ doesn't check for leakage, drips, or anything like that? They just plug in the computer and they say adios?
I understand that, and in fact, as being president of the Northwest Auto Trade Association for 10 years, we have worked with the DEQ a number of times to try to put together legislation that would actually, in fact, require cars to be tested for those drips and that leakage as they get older, because what we found out is in our state, we have about 4 million registered vehicles. If each were to leak one drop of motor oil a day, it creates a 25,000-gallon oil spill on the streets and highways in our state that ends up in our groundwater. That requires about 50,000 gallons of crude oil to make up for that 25,000 gallons of oil that is leaked. And one quart of that motor oil will contaminate about 250,000 gallons of water. So I'm an advocate for more testing, more stringent inspection on vehicles rather than less stringent inspection on vehicles, because vehicles have probably the largest and most negative footprint on our environment, I believe, as studies have shown.
I have a question for Mr. Ginsburg.
Okay, and then Senator Bates and then Senator Hansel.
Mr. Ginsburg, I find it interesting in this document that Palmer sent over that there are no numbers specifically put down for 2009, 10, 11, and 12 automobiles. And the statement that's made on here is that during 2012 calendar year, VIP tested 523,578 vehicles, see table. I find that to be disingenuous. That can't be an accurate number, because I know I was tested and I have a 2010 car. So it's at least off by one. So I'd like to know the number was off by one. And two, as we get into the newer cars, 2008, the result of error or failure is 0.74%. Now, did you leave off those following numbers because it would reduce your bottom line impact to 7.18%? Or was it left off because you don't keep the numbers?
Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Olson, vehicles that are younger than 4 or 5 years old are exempt from our test except under certain circumstances, like vehicles that are newly registered in Oregon that have been registered out of state. So there are a very small number of vehicles that are younger than 2008 that were tested in the last few years. We typically report the vehicles that are 5 years and older on a table like this because that's the bulk of the tests that are done. But I'd be happy to get you that small number of additional special circumstance vehicles. The failure rates for these younger vehicles, like the 2008 vehicles, as you can see, are less, much less than older vehicles on the table we provided you. The failure rate does increase with age, and more accurately, it increases with mileage. As those vehicles are used for a longer period of time, there's more failures of the emission control systems. But I'd also just like to repeat that the failure rate you're seeing here are the vehicles that failed after, at our station. As Mr. Anderson mentioned, that light comes on when there's a failure. If the light's off, the vehicle is going to pass our test. So if you have a brand new car and your light is on, the chances are pretty good you're going to take it back to the dealer and say, why is my light on? And you're going to get that car fixed. And then when you come in to get your car tested, it's going to be fixed. And that's the case, well down into this table as these vehicles are under warranty. The vehicle inspection program actually encourages this preventative maintenance to be done during the warranty period. So the actual failure rates, as I mentioned, are higher. As Senator Baines correctly pointed out, we don't have a big enough study to actually quantify exactly how much higher, but we know it's quite a bit higher, and anecdotally it seems like it may be 3 to 4 times higher than the numbers you see here.
Okay, I'll have Senator Bates.
I'm sorry, do you want to follow up?
No, not at all. Okay. Go ahead.
I have a follow-up, but I'll let Senator Bates go first. Yeah.
First, Mr. Anderson, thank you for coming today. Yeah. We always really appreciate citizens taking the time from their busy life to come up and try to get some information, and really do appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I do have a question for you, and this is sort of a mechanical question.
But this is not click and clack, by the way. So.
It could be.
That problem with this car needs to get fixed. He wants to find out how to do it.
Sorry, I couldn't resist.
I thought you had support groups for suburban owners, but anyway. When I've had my light come on, I've gone to get it fixed because I know I have to go through my inspection because I want the car running right. They've occasionally told me that I like have some kind of a tubing that's cracked or broken. I got an older car, and it seems like you seem to say that sometimes you can't pick up all the pollution coming out of a car, not the dripping oil, but maybe something leaking out of a hose. But it appeared to me that many times a hose leak was actually picked up by the computer. They plugged the computer and found the hose wasn't fixed. Am I misunderstanding that, or can you pick up some things out of the computer that will also tell you like a hose is broken or cracked or something of that nature? Can you pick that up from the computer also?
Senator Bates, no, you cannot. Okay. The only thing that is monitored on an automobile by a computer are those areas that have sensors or actuators installed in them. As an example, the ignition system on an automobile has a number of sensors and actuators that communicate with the computer based on fuel pressures and fuel bleed back, in other words, vapor bleed back into the tank. And if you have any sort of a leak in one of the hoses you're speaking of in that area, of course, then the actuators will sense a pressure indifference. The computer will know there's a VOC leak, volatile organic component leak or compound leak into the atmosphere, and it'll turn on that check engine light. So, again, your car might run just fine, but when that light's on, it really is not running environmentally correctly.
Thank you. Did you follow up?
I think he answered the question. I think it sounds like sometimes it does pick it up and sometimes it doesn't, so it probably vary what particular hose is having trouble with it.
It depends on which hose, yes, sir.
Chair Dinkfelder, if I could add to that answer, Bob is absolutely right that the test is not going to pick up leaks that will affect water quality, but the onboard diagnostic system is designed to pick up leaks of emissions to the air. There are sensors that will check the pressure, and if a hose that is part of that system is failing, the pressure will show it, and it will fail. And this computer test has been compared back-to-back with the most advanced tailpipe tests, the ones that take, you know, quite a bit of time, like 10 or more minutes to run. And actually, the computer test is more effective at catching failures than the tailpipe test because it can actually identify failed components before they start showing up in the emissions. In other words, one system on the car may be correcting for another system on the car. So what's coming out of the tailpipe temporarily is still meeting the tailpipe standard, but that component is being stressed to the point where it's going to fail, and you can end up with a very expensive repair. So the onboard diagnostic system is the most effective and accurate test we have, but no, it doesn't catch drips and leaks of oil that can affect water quality.
Of course, I wouldn't expect that.
Yes. Senator Hansel had a question first, and then Senator House.
Mr. Anderson, thank you very much for coming, and I do share Senator Bates' appreciation. I would just be curious, if Senate Bill 212 were to become law, would that affect your business one way or the other?
Everything that has to do with environmental issues in automobiles affects my business either positively or negatively. Does that answer your question?
Well, specifically the bill, would 212 affect you positively or negatively?
Well, since we're not in a test area, it would probably have little effect on me. We do get cars from the Portland area, however, from consumers that work in Salem that bring their cars to us because it's registration time and they've got a light on and we have to repair it. But we normally do their service work anyway. So I'm not sure if I could measure that accurately or not.
Thank you.
Senator House.
Thanks. When did you say the federal ozone rules would be in place?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
The ozone, the new levels that you were...
EPA has announced that they intend to propose the standard in 2013 and finalize it in 2014.
Okay. And if I could follow up.
Follow up.
I do want to say I very much appreciate the streamlining and the convenience changes that you've made with respect to the customer experience at these sites, although it would be much more convenient to not have to go through that.
Well, and I just want to clarify, so our current, because I'm looking at the Washington one right now, I have that up on my screen, and I was asking your question, and I need side-by-sides, because I need to have Oregon right in front of me. Can you just walk through existing statute of what Oregon's program is? As far as the, because in Washington law, it actually has a, I was sort of surprised that they actually have a year. And ours is what, how many years for the first, we give an exemption for the first X number of years, is that correct?
That's correct, Senator Dinkfelder.
So, and it's, so it's...
The key difference between Washington and Oregon now is that Washington's program is phasing out and it will end in 2020. The last year that their model year they're going to test is the 2008 model year. In Washington, they exempt the first 5 years. So this year, the 2008 model year is being tested. Next year, the 2009 model year won't be tested because of the phase out. And over the following 6 years, then they won't test the 2010, the 2011, 2013, and then by the year 2020, they'll stop testing entirely. So if this bill were adopted, it would end vehicle inspection in Oregon over the next 6 years. That's the primary difference.
And EPA has approved their plan?
No, Senator Dinkfelder, Washington has not yet submitted the change to EPA.
Okay, because I was going to say Clark County is not exactly, it's right across the river from my district, as you know, and they're part of the same airshed.
Yeah, and actually, Chair Dinkfelder, we prepared an interstate ozone plan with Vancouver for the Portland-Vancouver area, and our agreement with Washington at the time was that we would each get an equal percent reduction in pollution that was needed to meet the standards, although each state was free to choose which methods it would use. Both states chose vehicle inspection, although their program's a little different than ours. So the, I'll say, unilateral repeal of their vehicle inspection program is a change that would have to be approved and does affect the overall attainment status of the Portland-Vancouver area. So as I said, the Washington legislature has adopted this phase-out. The Washington Department of Ecology has incorporated into the phase-out into their regulations, but they have not yet submitted it to EPA for approval. It has not yet gone into effect because the first year it goes into effect is next year. And Washington's waiting to see what EPA does with the ozone standard, as we are. I can tell you there are other more detailed differences between our programs if you'd like.
Well, you know what I would like? I would like to prepare a side-by-side comparison for the committee so we can see, because for me right now I'm going back and forth and it's a little hard. I don't have a double screen, but I think it would be helpful as we have this discussion.
A little table.
I could make a joke about maybe we need to take away the bridge if they're not going to be doing their vehicle inspection and coming over. There are a few of us that would probably vote for that up here. But anyway, I appreciate that. Yeah. Senator Olson and then Senator Bates.
Either Mr. Ginsburg or Palmer, I would like to see the numbers because you obviously collect data of all the cars from 2009 forward that you actually have tested, because you certainly have data on that. And if those cars didn't need to be inspected, you're collecting fees that you shouldn't have to, and people shouldn't, with newer cars, have to go through this process. As I said, when I got my information from DMV, it says I'm in the test area, I need to be tested. It didn't exclude me with a new car or my truck. And I'm curious to find out if we are, in fact, disseminating this information and saying, you don't need to come in, or if, in fact, we are collecting that money, knowing full well they don't need to be tested.
Yes.
Is that information available?
Chair Dinkfelder, Senator Olson, I will absolutely get you that information. There are a small number of vehicles that are younger than 5 years old that are tested for the conditions I mentioned. And we'll look up your vehicle in particular and find out why it was required to be tested.
I don't even think, you weren't even a senator yet, were you?
I just got it done last week, or 2 weeks ago, over in Clackamas.
Uh-oh. Maybe somebody had you.
Yeah, that's why I'm asking the question. I didn't know there was
an exemption. It wasn't me. Rest assured, it wasn't me. Senator Bates.
ask my questions about that issue, but not particularly to you. Nothing personal.
Did you check for a GPS on your car as well?
If you're only targeting Republican senators, I have no problem with that. I don't think it's,
we're not.
Okay. I don't think it's wise, but I don't care. Is there a disconnect to you and DMV on this issue? It sounds like there is. Why are you checking anybody with a car, you know, less than 5 years old? You know, you gave me the conditions you're doing it under. It sounds like that sounds makes it even more confusing. A 5-year-old car is a 5-year-old car. I don't know if it came from Washington or California or Nevada. It's a 5-year-old car or less than 5 years old. It seems to me you could simplify this and make it easier for both sides. So that's one issue right there. I will say something else, though. My experience in getting my cars, you know, checked has been great.
Oh,
these guys are quick. Yeah. It's easy. It's 10 minutes. They have evening hours. They have Saturday hours. And I like picking my registration up at the same time. It's really a really nice. I don't want you guys to go away so I get my registration done easily. I don't care if you check the car.
I don't
want
to get a TV.
You know? But, I mean, it's really been a great service with very open people. But it sounds like there's a disconnect here between you and DHS. You may want to look at that. Maybe the disconnect is just too complicated. Make it simpler.
By the way, Senator, you said DHS. I know that was a Freudian slip.
Oh, sorry. I'm one of the budgets. DMV.
Well, you know,
my light's on, but nobody's home, okay?
We will absolutely look into that. The basic requirement is that on your when your vehicle is renewed for the second time, it's required to be tested. But I believe that there are provisions in the statute about vehicles that are initially registered in Oregon that create those small differences. But we can certainly look at that.
I have a question, though. What if you have a raccoon in your car? We had a bad raccoon jokes going around. Anyway, so my last question is that if you can also make sure and get the list of all the vehicle inspection stations around in the Portland and Medford area, so we just have a list of those. Certainly, if you haven't, there's four of us that have vehicle inspection in our area. I know you don't, but if Senator Hansel, certainly at some point we should probably have you just see one of the facilities in my district, so to speak. But they have gotten a lot better in the 20 years I've been going through the testing. It is actually easier to go to DEQ to get your car registered than DMV, which we do appreciate.
And
that.
It's a lot easier than going to DHS.
And I'll
get a health checkup on your car. There we go. But certainly, if you can make sure and get that information through Beth, and then they can disseminate it to all the committee members. I just want to make sure and see if there's any other questions before we let the DEQ go sit in the back row.
And right. We'll be happy to do that. And also, just for everyone's information, if you are wanting to go to a DEQ station, you can get on our website and look at a camera that will show you exactly how long that line is. And there's good tips about when to come to have the shortest and quickest experience at DEQ.
I've used that camera, so thanks for the reminder about that. And thank you very much for coming here today and taking time out of your business busy schedule. We have a few more folks that would like to testify today. Todd Weedman. Weedman, is that right? Yes. Mary Pavedo and Carrie Nissen. Thank you for coming here today and sharing your testimony. And just a reminder for the record, if you can state your name and whoever would like to go first.
Well, since I'm in the middle. Again, I'm Todd Weedman. I reside at 13790 Southeast 119th Drive, Clackamas, Oregon. And I am the owner of Todd's Import Automotive in Lake Oswego. So, may I read?
Yes. I was going to say, if it's really long, we'll ask you to summarize, but we do have enough time, so it'd be fine. And if you have, I guess we're going to ask. Great. Thank you. And just as long as we make sure and get the key points.
All right. So, Senator Dingfelder and Vice Chair Olson. So, having been in the industry for 37 years, I've seen significant changes in the automotive technology. And DEQ's vehicle inspection program has been a resource and advocate for the automotive repair industry. DEQ's benefit to the environment is undeniable, and their relationship with repair facilities has contributed to those facilities' education and ability to do their part. In fact, our customers have also been well-educated and usually come to us promptly after the malfunction indicator lamp, commonly referred to as a mill light, comes on, thus having the issue repaired prior to DEQ emission testing. So a preemptive repair may cause a false belief that vehicles rarely fail. This is indeed a false assumption, as most repairs are performed for purposes of reliability and fuel economy rather than out of the necessity of passing emission testing. However, this could change if newer vehicles are not subject to testing. Owners will feel compelled not to respect the malfunction light, and even the newest engines burn fuel much the same way they have for 100 years and require emission controls that will ultimately fail. System malfunction results in increased emissions and compromises reliability. The emission repair was a key part of the, or key cause for the formation of the National Automotive Service Task Force, NASTF, which was established in 2000. And that task force acts as an information conduit between vehicle manufacturers and independent service providers. De-emphasizing the importance of emissions could weaken manufacturers' willingness to provide repair facilities the information necessary to effectively repair vehicles, thus narrowing customers' choices. And one last comment is, I've talked to some people up in Washington, shop owners that I'm friends with, and then they were telling me about how the current system grants a waiver after $150 is paid towards the repair. However, most repairs significantly exceed this amount, and I feel this would tempt owners simply into a pay-to-pass situation, negating the value of the test system. So, I am against the Senate bill.
Okay. Thank you for coming here and for your testimony today. Why don't we hear from everybody, and then we'll see if there's some questions.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Chair Dingfelder, and Vice Chair Senator Olson, and Senator Bates, Senator Haas, and Senator Hansel. My name is Mary Pivoteau. I am president of Neighbors for Clean Air, which is an advocacy organization started by my neighbors and I to advocate for health protective air quality standards after we discovered the problem of air toxics in the neighborhood around our children's school. I served for 2.5 years on the Department of Environmental Quality's Portland Air Toxic Solutions Advisory Committee. And through that work, through my participation in the PATSAC process, I became acutely aware of the problem that transportation sector in general and personal vehicles cause in terms of the problem of air pollution and the most dangerous air pollution in our state and
Mary,
metro area.
I'm sorry, can you just, you don't have to be so close because we're getting feedback.
Okay,
so because they're pretty sensitive.
Thank you. Federal and state data show that exposure to toxic pollution is a significant problem throughout all of Oregon, and specifically in urban areas like Portland, Eugene, Springfield, Salem, Medford. There's currently no comprehensive approach to protecting the health of Oregonians from this toxic pollution. While there are federal and state programs aimed at toxic pollution, they've clearly been insufficient to protect the health of Oregonians. Recent federal National Air Toxics Assessment data showed that Oregon has, despite compliance with the federal NAAQS, has the third largest population in the country at its extreme risk from toxic pollution. This level of toxic pollution, and by toxics is different than the carbon pollution, the level of toxic pollution corresponds with more than 100 in a million excess cancers, while the standard for unreasonable risk is 1 in a million. No county in Oregon was below the unreasonable risk value. Approximately 3.2 million Oregonians live in counties with risk values twice the standard. This problem is even worse in urban areas, Lane, Marion, Jackson, Clackamas, Multnomah, and Washington counties, where approximately 2.2 million Oregonians have an average cancer risk value 4 times the standard. So I am concerned that any action to undo an effective means of reducing emissions from the largest contributor of toxic emissions is premature. The efficacy rate on the vehicle inspection program should be balanced with the risk that vehicle exhaust poses to the health of our children and to all of us. I do not believe we should relax controls before the problem of synergistic and cumulative impacts of a known carcinogen has been resolved. The minimal responsibility to assure our vehicles are maintained and inspected seems reasonable, weighed against the real health threat that vehicle emissions pose. I'm concerned that we are not yet ready to declare victory on the bigger front of air toxics, and therefore we should not undo an effective and efficient program that has proven to significantly reduce dangerous air pollution in areas around our state where the population is at most risk. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mary, for coming here today. I know you had to take time off from your schedule, so thank you.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder and committee members. My name is Carrie Neeson, and I work for the American Lung Association of the Mountain Pacific, and our mission there is to improve lung health and prevent lung disease. So one of the issues that we care a whole lot about is air quality, making sure that all Oregonians have healthy air to breathe. And we urge you to maintain Oregon's vehicle inspection program. We know that motor vehicles are a major source of air pollution, and all of the emissions from all of the cars that we have traveling around Oregon, all those emissions add up. The pollution that's caused by these emissions can cause serious health problems, and we know that mobile sources are one of the major contributors to ozone. And ozone we sometimes call smog, and it's a gas and it's invisible, and it's created when some of the compounds coming out of tailpipes combine with the right mixture of sunshine and heat. And the health effects from ozone are not good. They can shorten lives. We know that when areas suffer high ozone days, that there's increased visits to emergency departments by those suffering from lung disease, whether it's asthma or it's COPD. Ozone exposure leads to premature death. It can cause coughing and wheezing. It can exacerbate asthma attacks and the worsening of COPD. Ozone reacts with the lung tissue, and it affects everyone. I was talking to a doctor once, and we all know what sunburns do on the outside of our skin. And he described ozone exposure as a sunburn on your lung tissue. And we know that the inspection program reduces ozone in Oregon. Some of the other emissions issues that the Lung Association is concerned about is increased particulate matter. And these are very small pieces of matter. And the thing that's so damaging to them about lung health is those particles escape the natural systems that we have in our nose and our lungs to filter out harmful tissues, harmful toxins. So we know that those particles can get deep into our lungs and inflammation can start. And we also know that some of the air toxins can hitchhike under those particulate matters and also be absorbed deep into our lung tissue. Another concern for us is carbon monoxide, and we know that that can interfere with the blood's ability to carry oxygen to the brain, heart, and tissues. And if you're like me, I need all of the help that my brain can get, so I need to make sure it has all the oxygen it can. Inspection programs not only alert us when adjustments can be made to our cars to help them run better and to make sure that we get the best gas mileage possible, but they're also really important to reduce air pollution. And we believe these programs are a good investment for Oregon. All Oregonians should care about air pollution. Exposure can make us sick and shorten lives. So we encourage the continuation of what we believe this program does, and it saves lives and improves our health. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you for coming here today. We'll see if there's any questions for any of the panel members. No?
I only have but one. Do you realize that newer cars aren't tested? I just found this out myself, so I just wanted to ask if you knew that newer cars were not tested in the first 5 years.
Correct.
Okay.
I believe that to be true, but I know it now for sure.
Yeah, so. I didn't know that either, yeah. So I just wanted to know if you did.
I do know that for sure.
Okay.
So except yours.
Except mine got tested. Mine got tested. No, the point being, sir, I appreciate you coming down, and thank you very much for your testimony. And you know, I know exactly where your business is. And with older cars, I understand that, you know, we need to have facilities such as yours. To be honest with you, I'd like to see you be able to test the car instead of DEQ do it, because you have more experience and expertise as to exactly what goes on with the functioning of the vehicle, and they don't. The good chair had said that, you know, they looked into that and privatizing would be a little bit more expensive. But I feel that you would have better expertise and hands-on experience to make certain that car was running efficiently, whereas DEQ goes and tests and says, okay, go get it fixed and bring it back. you know, you could do that on the spot. So I would prefer that you would do the testing, but that's another story for another day.
And you need to have the mic and maybe state your name for the record again.
Yes. Yeah, Todd Weedman. And Senator Dinkfelder and Olson, that sounds interesting, and we do it preemptively, but that sounds like an awful lot of paperwork. There's going to be a level of accountability that I'm quite sure that, of course, it's all speculative, but we kind of like it the way it is. It works really nice. But a lot of, like I said, again, just reiterating, is that we do it preemptively repair the majority of those cars. And that's one of the reasons people do get them repaired is they know they can't pass, they can't get the registration. And so if they were not accountable to that, I have a very high confidence in the fact that there would be an increase and they would not be repaired.
Follow up. Wouldn't you like to have the $19?
Somehow I know I wouldn't get $19 with all due respect.
Good point.
Well, thank you all for coming. I also especially want to thank Mary Pivito, who's spent years of her life working on this issue. And she was on the front page of the Oregonian about, a year ago or several months ago. And but I know that you've worked on lots of other issues. Really appreciate the work that you've done on advocacy on air toxics, and appreciate you coming here today because this is a little tangential, I know, from other issues that you've worked on. So I was really pleased to see you here, and thank you both all for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Ledger. Now, this is going to be strange because I'm calling John Ledger up from AOI and Angela Crowley Koch from the Oregon Environmental Council. We're just cranky because we didn't get cupcakes. Whoever wants to go first, John?
I can. Madam Chairman, members of the committee, John Ledger, Vice President of Associated Oregon Industries. I'm going to speak briefly on, this comes under the category of nothing is simple, and that is there is a large industrial component, an economic component to this issue that I'm just going to touch on so you're aware of it. First of all, we see this kind of falling into two pieces in this discussion. One is the mechanical aspects of the program, that is whether Republican cars get tested or Democratic senators or all of you or not AOI members. And we're willing to talk about that. But that our main concern is that the program be effective, and here's the reason why. If an area goes into non-attainment for ozone, the area, just because of the nature of the pollutant, will be very large. It will probably come down into Salem, and it'll probably go up the gorge for a ways. And that is because ozone is it's a summertime pollutant, and it occurs when you mix volatile organic compounds, like, you know, that when you would spill, you don't anymore, but gasoline, when you're pumping your car, the VOCs go up and mixes with NOx from your tailpipe or VOCs, organics from paint, like get something from it and it says low VOC, you can sell in California, that's to control ozone. Mix VOCs and NOx, sunlight, and get ozone. And it travels a distance, a long time, while it forms. So you have these huge areas that go into non-attainment. And when an area goes into non-attainment, it's very, very difficult to build or modify a facility. If it has something like a boiler, you know, just a dryer, anything that emits VOCs or NOx, becomes extraordinarily difficult to site or expand, and it becomes expensive to operate. So what EPA does is they go, here's the standard, and we kind of set this sort of design level below the standard, assuming everyone's driving a car and everybody's operating their plant, whether they are or not at the same time. And then, you know, the actual monitored numbers bounce around below that. But there'll be a certain increment of that space between zero and the design value that is allotted to automobiles. And EPA will give it some number. And they'll give it a number by going through a complicated formula that takes into account what the inspection and maintenance program looks like. And you get more or less credit for how you do it. But there'll be some number there. And then there'll be a number between that and the design value that is essentially allotted for other things like industry. So if you have an area, first of all, that breaks the standard, and there's concern about that because we're afraid EPA is going to lower that standard way down, But even if it doesn't, if it lowers the standard, that shared space that cars and industry get shrinks. So from the industrial and economic standpoint, it's important to us that the program be effective and that EPA give maximum credit to or maximum reductions for ozone coming from cars, because that has big economic implications. So our suggestion to you, and I think this is a very timely time to discuss the bill, you know, regardless of what the text of the bill is, because we're going to see new ozone standards come into place. DEQ is going to have to develop a new plan to make sure those standards are not violated. And I think that's the kind of thing that certainly a committee like this would want the agency to come back after the standards come out and say, this is how we propose we're going to make sure we don't violate the standards. This is the impact it's going to have on your cars, and here's how we're going to deal with that. And this is the impact it's going to have on industry. And that would kind of be the logical time to address this. But we're pleased to see the bill come up because it gets the conversation started, because it's a complicated one, more than just cars. And with that, I'll wait for questions if there are any. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, John. Angela, I know you're not going to read your testimony.
No, I'm not. For the record, my name is Angela Crowley Cook. I'm the legislative director at Oregon Environmental Council. Thank you for having this hearing today. Oregon Environmental Council is opposed to Senate Bill 212. That's because the vehicle inspection program is a very cost-effective way to reduce smog pollution. And smog pollution is serious business, as we've heard from other witnesses, especially here in Oregon. Oregon adults have a higher burden of asthma than the overall U.S. population. And in addition, in 2009, Oregon had the highest prevalence of adults with asthma in the entire nation. And some of these pollutants are directly related to asthma, not only to asthma, but also to cancer. And a couple pollutants that were mentioned earlier, like benzene, acrolein, and 1,3-butadiene. And that one in particular is really interesting because in Oregon, we have levels of this butadiene that are 10 times our clean air targets. And 64% of that pollution comes from passenger vehicles. So kind of going back to what John was saying, these emissions come from a variety of sources, and if we don't, you know, hold the vehicles accountable for this type of pollution, then the burden kind of shifts over to industry to take care of this butadiene and other pollutants, even though they may not be the cause of that. So I think we have to really think seriously before we eliminate a program like this of what it will do to Oregon industry to meet our clean air standards. Lastly, I just want to say that before we move ahead with this, I think it's important not only to wait for the federal ozone standard and see what that will be, but Washington State has kind of given us a gift here by passing this law on their own. They haven't even started implementing it. So I think we would be wise to wait and see what happens in Washington. Will they be able to still meet their clean air targets while eliminating their vehicle inspection program? Thank you very much.
Thank you both. Other questions? Senator Bates?
A question, John. I find your discussion very interesting because we had the same question about 3 years ago in Medford when we were talking about eliminating a testing station and how it would affect our mills and some other things that we depend on for our, you know, for our economy. Two things. One, the way this spreads from a given area out is if you go up above our valley, you can see it spread as the inversion gets mm-hmm. worse. Would that indicate that potentially we might be looking under the new federal regulation not only at a lower standard, but a larger geographic area that might be covered? That's my first question. And then the second question is, I'm not sure quite what you said about, you know, automobiles versus industry. I thought what you're saying is you'd like to see it as tight as possible on automobiles, giving more room for industry, which I would too, by the way, but because I want to encourage industry, and if we don't squeeze the cars, we end up shifting it over industry, and it seems to me that would be a negative for our economy. Would you comment a little more clearly on that, if you could?
Sure. Madam Chairman, Senator Bates, ozone is really interesting in that there's not much ozone emitted, per se. It's NOx, which you get when you get air really hot, like in your car, you burn nitrogen in the atmosphere and you produce nitrogen oxides, and volatile organic compounds, which are solvents and from gasoline, goes up in the air, has to have sunlight, goes through a complex series of reactions as it travels, and very often the highest ozone layers are not right around where these emissions are. It goes, and it can be hundreds of miles away. It can be, like California, Los Angeles affects Las Vegas ozone. And so as you ratchet down that standard, that number, because this spreads out, just by the way diffusion occurs, you're going to wrap in a larger area. Now, this is highly sensitive to topography. And so when EPA models a non-attainment area, it's going to be different in Seattle, Portland, where you live. It's going to be dramatically different depending on the topography. But it occurs during summertime inversions, not wintertime. And the other piece, which perhaps I didn't make clear, is, and this is common, if the ozone standard drops and the amount of ozone attributable to automobiles goes up, you'll have, even in areas that are not non-attainment, but meeting the standard, the controls that the state will have to put on those industries, especially if you're going to start a new one, will be much tighter because you can't threaten to break that kind of maintenance budgeted line.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
I have one.
It's in it.
Ms. Crowley-Cook, on your report here, you talk about Oregon has the largest or the highest prevalence for asthma in our nation. Is that geographically located, or is that the entire state?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, that's for the entire state.
So since Eastern Oregon really doesn't have the problem that we are dealing with DEQ stations, is there an equivalent number of people with asthma in Eastern Oregon as there would be in the Portland metro area or in the Medford-Ashland area?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, I don't have those numbers at the moment, but I can certainly get them for you.
I'm just curious that if we're the highest, and one would think the concentration would be in the areas that have the greatest amount of ozone.
Senator, I can get those numbers for you.
All right, thank you. Sure. I appreciate it.
And we do have the Lung Association here, so they may be able to provide us some. They probably don't have it off the top of their head, unless they see her nodding. So maybe you can follow up with that.
I have one follow-up from Mr. Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
If the standards come out and they're much, much lower, how do we, since we have this vehicle traffic and it's growing all the time, how do we balance what your needs are for what the automobile industry is? You're going to be the ones that are going to be pressed, aren't you?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, you hit on what will be a very difficult task. And what the agency will have to do is come up with an attainment plan. And I have done this in another state. I ran air programs in another state. And you have to do this allotment, essentially, of space. And you get it where you can get it. And you go through the rulemaking, and it can be a very difficult, expensive, nasty process. Nobody wants to go into non-attainment. Nothing good comes from it.
Follow-up? I might be mistaken, but I think when we talked about this last session, and Palmer might correct me on this, I think the highest level of ozones we had in the Portland metro area are down around Malala. Do I remember my maps correctly?
Maybe that's why your car was tipped.
Because of wind yeah. Currents, they're actually out of the metro test zone, but I think they get the highest concentration. Mm-hmm. I'd like you to check on it if you would, but I think that's what I remember.
Well,
but it's interesting that we're gonna if they lower it, we're gonna run into this situation where we're gonna impede the industry.
And Madam Chair, Representative Olson, it will be a very large area.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you. Any other questions? Okay, anybody else that would like to testify on this? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And before we close the public hearing, I just want to say thank you to everybody who came here to testify, especially folks who came from, had to take time off from work. It's really good, excellent discussion. And even though, like I said, the last time I spent a lot of in-depth time in this program, It was several years ago, so we've had a lot of changes, including the standards of cars improving. But certainly I think we'll want to have continued updates on this program, because it sounds like there are potentially some changes underway. And I wanted to thank the good senator for bringing this forward. It's an excellent discussion today. So with that, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 212. We do have another public hearing, gentlemen, we would have started it first, but since folks were running late, we're going to open up a public hearing on our first House bill, which is House Bill 2436. Beth, if you can give us the overview.
Madam Chair and committee members, House Bill 2436, for the record, has no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact, no statement issued. It modifies the Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Technology Loan Program, commonly known as EAST. It adds additional definitions and stipulates where EAST loan funds may be spent and who may administer EAST loan funds.
And what was the vote out of the House, please?
Okay,
you can look that up. Okay. So for the two new members, I was going to say there was one member who voted on this program last, or all of us except for the new member voted on this program last year. And this is the Energy Efficiency Sustainable Technology Loan Program. And my understanding is there were some changes that needed to occur. As you can see when you look in the background of your SMS report, it was created and there were some tweaks that needed to occur. And I think we're going to hear a little bit about that today. So we have Anthony, is it Buckley? Yeah, from the Oregon Department of Energy. And then, Gary, did you want to come up and testify because you weren't signed up? Okay, come on up, gentlemen. So tell us why this bill is before us and how this bill fixes anything that needs to be fixed.
Madam Chair and committee members, sorry, just as they come up, it was 59 votes in favor on the House floor, and it looks like it was unanimous in committee.
It was unanimous
in committee, and it looks like 59 votes in favor on the House floor.
Okay, and I'm going to ask the committee staff if you
one
can
excused.
Put the,
yeah.
Yes, put that on the SMS from now. Okay, who would like to go first?
Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, I'm Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. I appreciate the opportunity to appear this afternoon in support of House Bill 2436. I'll try to be real brief. These are truly housekeeping amendments. The EAST program, which was passed back in 2009, I believe it was, also set up kind of a pilot project to kind of see how this program would work. During that process, a work group was formed by the Department of Energy and the Public Utility Commission, consisting of utilities, vendors, energy trust, consumer groups. And out of that, we identified a few minor changes to the program. The first, in Section 1, the bill adds a definition of primary contractor. Primary reason for that, I think you'll see, basically, is the primary contractor then becomes responsible for supervision and warranty of any subcontractors. It also replaces the term sustainable energy territory with utility service territory, and that intent is to basically simplify the boundaries of how the program operates so that they would be consistent with each utility service territory. Section 5 addresses how the program works when there are overlapping utility service territories. For electric utilities, it doesn't matter because they all have their assigned service territories. Our assigned service territory as a gas utility overlaps with about 17 different electric utilities. So this clarifies then that it's whoever provides the kind of basically the heating source becomes the program service boundaries. And then Section 12 deletes some language that currently states if there is a change in ownership of the property, that the utility is required to transfer the responsibility of repayment of the loan to the new account holder. The problem there is the utility holds no interest in the loan, utility is not a party to the loan contracts, and the utility cannot lawfully reassign the repayment of this debt. And so by removing that language, it becomes silent. Utilities can still continue to transfer the loan and allow for on-bill payment. It just doesn't require it, because that's got to be an issue between the buyer and the seller of the home. Utility has no standing in that. And then the other sections really just kind of are implementing those definitional changes. Thank you very much. Happy to answer questions.
Okay, why don't we have Anthony go, and then we'll see if there's any questions. Thank you.
Chair Dinkfelder, Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Buckley. I'm an administrator with the Oregon Department of Energy, here today to testify in support of House Bill 2436. The Energy Efficiency and Sustainable Technology Program provides authority to finance residential and commercial energy efficiency and renewable energy projects by allowing consumers to repay energy loans as a line item charge on their monthly utility bill. The Oregon Department of Energy Small-Scale Energy Loan Program received lottery proceeds to carry out the EAST pilot program back in May of 2010. Under the EAST program, the Oregon Department of Energy has provided $2.8 million in grants to various Oregon organizations for the purpose of piloting EAST programs to assist residential homeowners in obtaining low-cost, affordable financing for energy efficiency projects. To date, the EAST pilots have had an estimated $25 million economic impact within 14 Oregon counties. In the testimony I've handed that you've been given, there's a matrix of what we have tracked as the impacts that add up to or total to that $25 million. The bill HB 2436 provides several modifications and technical fixes to the EAST that will improve the overall functionality of the program. These recommendations will require modifications to the EAST rules to align service territory, contractor certification, and loan transfer provisions with the modified statute. In summary, HB 2436 provides technical fixes to the EAST legislation that would improve the functionality of the program. With that, I thank you, and I'm open for any questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, gentlemen. Let's see if there's any questions.
Mr. Bauer, you had said that this is a housekeeping bill. It really doesn't make any significant changes. It just clarifies what has to be changed. Is that correct?
Chair Dingfelder, Senator Olson, that's correct.
Thank you for that clarification. I actually have more of a comment, so I may wait until the work session on that, but wanted to just make sure and see if there was any other questions for gentlemen. Okay, thank you very much. Now I lost my point. Oh, okay. Like, one goes out, and so anybody else would like to testify on House Bill 2436 today? No? Robin, you're not getting up to testify? Okay. That wasn't volunteering. With that, I'm going to close the public hearing then on House Bill 2436. I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 2436, and we'll take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that House Bill 2436 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Olson moves that House Bill 2436 be reported out of committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? I would just like to comment, and we've already lost the... but certainly thank Northwest Natural for working on this. This is a bill that was passed in 2009. I thought it was a great idea back then, although it had some bugs to be worked out. Really pleased to see that we've been able to make those tweaks. And I know the bottom line is that we've been able to create jobs, and if you've seen the $25 million economic impact. So really pleased to see that we're fixing this program so it can work even better, and really want to thank Representative Bailey, who I know has spent a big chunk of his life trying to make sure that this works properly for the citizens of Oregon. So with that, I will ask the clerk to call the roll.
Senator Bates?
Aye.
Senator Hansel?
Aye.
Senator Hatch?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson?
Aye.
Chair Dinkfelder?
Aye. That the motion carries, and... Senator Haas, would you like to carry this to the floor?
Happy to.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, we will close the work session on House Bill 2436. And Beth, any more work for today?
Madam Chair and committee members, I think that's the entirety of your agenda.
Okay. We get out early today. Thank you very much, gentlemen, and with that, we are adjourned.